Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, it's Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast. It's Thursday, April 21st. This is a historic day in New Jersey, the day adult-use recreational cannabis sales begin in the state, starting at 13 different sites that were previously authorized for medical marijuana sales. Right now, on day one, we want to look at one wrinkle that's come up already in New Jersey and in other legal weed states. Can you still lose a job or a job offer for testing positive for cannabis that you used outside of work when you were not impaired on the job? You might call it policing impairment in the workforce, and policing literally and figuratively in this case, because when acting Attorney General of New Jersey, Matthew Platkin, said that police officers would be free to partake of legal cannabis when off duty under the current law, there were calls for provisions to bar those in what are called safety-sensitive jobs from its use, since there's no easy way to check for impairment. So if you're just in any job like police officer where you can't be impaired, there's no breathalyzer test like there is for alcohol for cannabis. So some people don't want police officers and others in what are called safety-sensitive jobs to be able to use it at all, even in a legal cannabis state. Governor Murphy has indicated he would be open to such a law, but whether the legislature can pass that provision is yet to be seen. So with us to talk about the rules in New Jersey and the ones coming in New York and to put it in the national context of other legal states, I'm joined once again by Allison Martin, co-founder of Cannabis Wire and adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. Cannabis Wire is a news organization that covers cannabis in America. Hey, Allison, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much for having me again. I always love being here, and I really like how you framed it as a wrinkle, a policy wrinkle. I think that's accurate.
Meaning it's not that big a thing? It's just a little wrinkle, or what do you mean?
Oh, man. No. It's a huge wrinkle, actually. So I think it's such an interesting policy area because there are a couple of things at play with cannabis. There's impairment, and then there are positive tests for THC, which don't necessarily correlate. So that's the beginning of this giant ball of yarn, I think.
Yeah. So let's talk about the idea of impairment, even sort of conceptually and metrically, and why even though employers are allowed to prohibit working while under the influence, that seems like common sense, that's tricky for legal weed in a way that it's not for alcohol, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Well, so there are a few things here. So, a positive THC urine test can occur for weeks after somebody consumes cannabis, especially if someone's a heavy consumer. So that's one thing. And even with blood tests, another type of test, the presence of that THC doesn't necessarily equal impairment. And then there's a third layer, which I think is interesting and what further separates cannabis from alcohol, which is impairment affects people differently based on, the type of cannabis they're consuming and also just who somebody is and, you know, whether they've eaten and how tall they are or how much they weigh. So, you know, for example, if you and I had the same edible or use the same vape pen, you know, we might experience different levels of impairment or intoxication. So factors and variables are at play when you're sort of deciding what impairment actually is versus what a positive THC test is.
So when there's a safety-sensitive job, to use that category, like a police officer who might need to make a split-second decision that has life and death implications, or maybe a train operator or whatever, is there good science already on how long ago they could have used cannabis and still have their full wits about them on the job the next day, 2 days later, 4 hours later, whatever?
I mean, as far as like quote unquote good science, I think that's so tricky. I mean, so where things are falling now is that, you know, safety sensitive employees, you know, train conductors, you know, EMTs, firefighters, bus drivers, you know, people for whom, you know, their own safety or other safety is part of the job. Generally, you know, policies are falling on the side of not allowing those types of people to consume cannabis off hours, in part because that science is so tricky. I mean, detecting impairment is actually sort of coming down on the side of subjectivity, which is what's making this wrinkle, you know, as I was like alluding in the beginning, so such a big wrinkle. Subjectivity when it comes to this stuff is pretty tricky.
Allison, let's move on to non-safety sensitive jobs. In New York, where they're in the process of starting legal weed sales, laws were put into place, I see, to prohibit employers from testing for cannabis unless it's required by federal law for that particular job or contract, or unless the employee, quote, manifests articulable symptoms of cannabis impairment, unquote, that interfere with their work or workplace safety. So bottom line, what does that mean in terms of people who apply for a job in New York State? Can they be given a drug test, like I think happens in many industries routinely before this law?
Yeah. So, I mean, New York and New Jersey are both falling on the side of more worker protections as far as cannabis use is concerned. But, and you're brave for articulable symptoms of impairment for, you know, that's a tongue twister. But there's there's actually no complete list of symptoms of impairment. You know, it's, quote, objectively observable indications that the employee's performance of duties of their position are somehow decreased or lessened. So again, you know, this is pretty subjective and open to interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Right, in terms of articulable symptoms.
Yeah. It's basically whether somebody thinks somebody seems impaired.
Right. Well, what about if you're just applying for a job and you're an applicant and they're going to hire you? Can they screen you with a cannabis test? I believe that in some legal states they can.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is an area, you know, with so many areas of cannabis policies, there's a patchwork, right? It's basically what the state, you know, decides. I think broadly speaking, to kind of account for, you know, the most number of employers in New York and New Jersey, really what it comes down to is that employers are going to have to clearly articulate in their employee handbook specifically what's allowed and what's not allowed. And employees with questions are going to have to ask those questions. You know, it's going to have to be an area, I think, of, you know, employer policy and employment policy going forward, where what I'm seeing is, you know, the advice is just be as clear as you possibly can in your employee handbook during that hiring process.
Adam in Hillsdale, you're on WNYC. We have a few New Jersey calls coming in here on day one. Adam, hi there. You're on with Allison Martin.
Hey, Brian, first-time caller, long-time listener. I applied for a handgun in New Jersey. One of the questions on the questionnaire is, do you smoke marijuana or have you? I think you can be banned from using a handgun in New Jersey or owning one, and I don't know how the police get a pass on that. I'll take my call off the air or answer
Thank
off
you.
The air.
Thank you very much. Interesting area. Are you familiar with it, Allison?
Yes. Yes, very familiar. That's a super interesting question. So actually, there was some news out of Florida yesterday. So this is not just a New Jersey thing. This is across the country. And I think that this is an area of policy that, you know, push is going to come to shove sometime soon. And there's going to have to be clarification. So Basically, medical cannabis patients or adult use cannabis consumers technically either have to lie to the feds or they cannot purchase firearms and ammunition. Actually, yesterday I talked to Florida Ag Commissioner Nikki Fried about a lawsuit that she's spearheading, seeking clarity on this very issue. You know, she told me yesterday that she was in contact with the White House on Monday about it also. But yeah, basically, there are a lot of cannabis consumers and medical cannabis patients across the country who are caught in this sort of crosshairs. Like, you know, do they forfeit their, you know, Second Amendment rights, or do they lie on that form? It's a big issue. It's come across my, you know, metaphorical desk quite a few times, especially recently.
And does it suggest a larger category of thing here, which is in legal states, even if you use cannabis legally and safely under the law, presumably safely, that there are things that you can be barred from even though you live in a legal state and are using it responsibly as far as you could tell?
Yeah, for sure. So there are a number of areas, at least a dozen I can think of off the top of my head, where you know, state and federal law collide actually in a pretty major way. You know, guns, that's one area. You know, another area is around, you know, with certain charges, right? Cannabis charges, people can face huge barriers and hurdles to accessing things like federal student loans, federal housing, if somebody receives federal subsidies for housing. So there are many
federal
many
housing subsidies and student loans could be
In question it, for
in
cannabis
question,
consumers.
Does it actually happen for legal cannabis consumers in legal states?
Yeah, no, it does happen. And it's not infrequent, right? Like these are issues that come up time and time and time again, right? I've been on this beat since like 2009 before it was coming up as often as it is now. But, yeah. You know, federal law is unequivocal, right? Cannabis is a Schedule I substance and federally illegal. Just because, you know, dozens of states have decided to change their laws, New York, New Jersey, you know, today, obviously being included in that, that doesn't change the fact that federal law is pretty black and white on this. So when federal law becomes an area of intersection, it becomes at the very least complicated.
Right. And that's why, for example, when you bring up housing, Mayor Adams' idea in New York that he brought up just the other day, that pot could be grown atop NYCHA buildings, is likely a no-go for now because they're financed, NYCHA buildings are, with federal rent subsidies.
Right.
So there's another area of that conflict. Here is Bobby, who is a truck driver. Bobby, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in. Hi. Do we have Bobby? Do I have the right line? Is it Bobby? Passenger right now? Heading into Manhattan?
Hello?
In a vehicle? Hi there.
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I'm going over a bridge. I drive a truck. And I have a CDL, which is interstate license. And believe me, I don't think anybody driving a truck or any of these other jobs that have other people's lives in hand should be smoking weed at any time. I mean, it's, you know, it's a little ridiculous.
Even off the job the night before?
Yeah, but you don't know. You want to take that chance? I'm driving a truck with 180,000 pounds on it. You want to take a chance? That I'm in pain. I don't think so.
Bobby, thank you very much. Are there specific rules for truck drivers or taxi drivers, anything like that, Allison?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. This, you know, I think that when it comes to folks who are driving, you know, across America's roads, I personally, what I've seen based on my reporting, I think some folks are split, right? Like some folks believe who are, you know, truck drivers like Bobby, and thanks for calling in with this. This is an interesting area of the policy here. Some folks would like to, you know, like they crack open a Budweiser or, you know, an IPA or whatever at the end of a night. They should be able to also smoke from a vape pen or inhale from a vape pen or have an edible. So when it comes to DOT, DOT is, you know, the short answer is it's the same as, you know, federal law. It's pretty unequivocal, you know, no use as far as these safety sensitive employees are considered. But one thing I do want to add, though, is that with the big infrastructure bill that Congress passed in late 21, they actually called for a report on research barriers to understanding cannabis impairment. Impaired driving. It was with the aim of creating a national standard for cannabis impairment. And also that call for research isn't new. In 2017, the DOT itself called for better research on cannabis impairment. So it really still comes down to that issue of what actually is impairment. It comes down to, you know, Bobby's, you know, sort of question around, we don't know, right? We don't know if that impairment trickles into the next morning and this person's driving, you know, X, you know, thousands of pounds of cargo. You know, what is that impairment?
Catherine in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. I'm calling because I wanted to share a story about my childhood friend with whom we've been friends for decades, who is a lung cancer survivor, can't smoke anything, and also has rheumatoid arthritis. She lives in Florida. She has a medical card, and her physician prescribes a cream combination of THC and CBD. She had an accident in the workplace, fell, tripped over a wire, hit her head, got a concussion. She saw her doctor, and he said, you need to go see the workers' comp doctor. So she went and saw the workers' comp doctor and had no idea, but they tested her urine, and, of course, the THC showed up. She then said, well, I have a medical card. My doctor prescribed it. When she went into work, she had been there for 2 decades. Her employers called her into a room. One of them, a middle-aged man, was crying and said, we have no choice but to fire you because this is a federally regulated substance.
Yeah.
And she lost her pension.
Oh.
I mean, she can't even get a job. And she was fabulous and had been there for 2 decades. And I also have a son who happens to grow medical cannabis in Oregon, where the medical cannabis industry has been decimated since it's gone recreational. And I just feel like it's the wild, wild west, and big corporations are coming in, and everything's moving so quickly, and regular people are getting caught in the snare.
And even the fact that the person whose story you were telling had a prescription from a doctor for marijuana as a medicine did not shield her from losing her job and her pension. Allison, you've heard this before. I have a feeling.
Yeah, I have. I have. So it's actually not technically a prescription unless it's the FDA approved, you know, Epidiolex, you know, the CBD formulation that's been approved for very narrow conditions, usually related to seizures. It's a recommendation. It's a recommendation from the doctor. And, you know, federal law is the sort of beginning, middle, and end on a lot of this. And my guess is that when that really unfortunate termination came down, when the employer's hands were tied, it probably just came down to that very simple federal law says it's illegal, and that's just what it is. Now, when federal law changes on cannabis, which, you know, if I were a betting woman, I would 100% bet that federal law is going to change on this. It's a matter of when. These are going to be some of the many, many wrinkles that are going to need to be ironed out because, you know, you mentioned workers' compensation, and it is starting to come up in some legal disputes in various states, but it's another area of patchwork that comes down to, you know, interpretation of state law versus federal.
Catherine, what a horrible story about your friends.
It is so sad. But thank you. Thanks for letting me tell it.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing it.
Yep.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. And thank you for sharing it. And it's a cautionary tale. So I guess in our last 30 seconds, Allison, I guess, you know, this whole conversation about this wrinkle, even as legal adult recreational sales go online in New Jersey today, there's this whole workplace related area that people still have to be aware of.
For sure. And, you know, depending on where people, especially in an area like the New York City metro, you know, folks are traveling New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and those laws are all different. You know, it's the Northeast and you can drive into a different state in 15 minutes. It's just going to come down to really knowing what the state's policies are and really knowing how specific employers, you know, act on those policies very specifically in those employer handbooks and employee handbooks.
Right. Until and unless this gets smoothed out at the federal level, and they do talk about that in Congress right now, but nothing's about to pass. Allison Martin, co-founder of Cannabis Wire and adjunct professor at the Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.